No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world. Today, we got motherfucking Orlando on here. One of the most important A&R's industry motherfuckers, which I bet you hate being called an industry motherfucker, but in the game right now.
Man, listen, I ain't no industry more. I'm just helping the youth.
Yeah.
Have a platform, that's it.
As soon as I met you, I was like, oh my God, I love this guy. Which is weird, because I felt like there was like multiple years there where we were like supposed to link up or something, and it didn't happen.
Coast and in the slums, you know,
right?
Stuck in there in the bottom, listening to these artists.
So let's talk about your upbringing for the people out there. So you're from Jersey.
Jersey.
Where exactly?
Jersey City.
Right. So crazy upbringing or what?
I mean, regular.
Jersey City's pretty rough though.
Regular street upbringing, you know.
Wasn't that crazy, or?
I mean, it's regular to me, you know.
When you start selling weed or whatever you were doing.
Shit, like. 13.
13, you're selling dime bags or what?
You know, multiple, you know? Jersey's a rough place, you know?
Right. And you felt like you had to go into that, like you just felt like you had to hustle or
I
did?
Clothes, man.
Huh?
I wanted clothes.
Wanted clothes, okay. Yeah,
food, you know?
What were you trying to rock at the time, clothes wise?
At the time, when I wanted a pair of Gore-Texes.
Okay.
I wanted a pair of Gore-Tex Bears.
Uh huh. And that was the desire to get fresh will overwhelm any reasonable desire to stay out of jail.
Killed out here, fucking crazy.
Facts. What about all right? So you start doing that and stuff, and was that just when did you drop out of school or you finished school?
Nah, it took me 5 years, but I was cool. I finessed, you know.
Right.
Did a little program and still, you know.
School is where
benefits of it.
School is where the
but I like to go to school. I like to wake up and get dressed and, you know, go somewhere. Where else I was gonna go?
Yeah.
And I was gonna stay sleeping all day in my house, like somewhere to go and do something.
I didn't have that hustler mentality when I was a kid. I wish I did. Although I probably would have got caught, like got fucked up worse than I did.
School is where you meet people. Like, yeah. You know, if you just on your block and you ain't going to school, you just gonna know people on your block.
Right.
But if you go to high school, it's people from other blocks and other neighborhoods. You can finesse better. You get to meet people.
Mm-hmm. Were you clued into like the music game at all at that point? Or
yeah, I fucked with rap heavy. Like, I was big on Stretch and Bobito every Thursday.
Okay.
I record that shit, pop it up, and listen to it every Friday, see who was on there, see what was new and fresh back then.
Right. But never occurred to you that you would have any kind of involvement in the industry or?
Nah, that shit was a pipe dream, like, you know?
Right. When did you start to, like, meet artists that were doing anything in the game?
I had went to school with Ransom.
Right. Who, for those who don't know, is kind of a Jersey legend. He's, like, Joe Budden's nemesis for a while there. Right. So perhaps Ransom. Most known for that at a certain point.
He went hard. Ransom went hard out there. I had went to school with Ransom. And from fucking with Ransom, we just started doing things. And I had a little studio, and he just go up there and record, and we just start going hard and met Stack Bundles.
Right.
Him and Stack Bundles and started doing a lot of records together. Then we just linked up with Clue, and we just started running around with Clue. But I was young. I was like 18.
What age or what year was it roughly when you started messing with Ransom and them?
Shit, I don't remember, bro.
Was it the mixtape era?
2003.
Okay.
A while ago.
2003 was when the mixtape scene in New York was going crazy.
But I was young. I was like 18. So, you know, I had these artists signed to me, and I was only 18 years old. Like, you know, I didn't know what I was doing.
They were signed to you. How did you know how to sign somebody?
I mean, I just asked people how to do it. Like, how would I go about this? And, you know, we went and got a studio and just, you know, started a company and just started going from there.
But were you selling albums or were you? Because 2003 is a weird time period.
Back then it wasn't selling. You know what it was? Back then it wasn't streaming.
Right.
And then Napster came out. So the industry ain't know how to combat that. So they started, the deals had got smaller.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the same. A lot of people weren't getting deals. Like, we went like 2 years without anybody getting a deal.
Right.
Nobody. It was no platforms to put music out.
Right.
So if somebody ain't put you out, it wasn't going to happen.
2003, that was like the dead era, because like 2001 is when Napster started just crushing CD sales. So it's like, as a rapper, you could still sell mixtapes and shit at that point, but you know, there wasn't like the game wasn't solidified. It was all fucked
dead.
Up.
It was dead. Yeah. There was a lot of people doing freestyle battles, but that shit wasn't paying. It wasn't like they was monetizing off of it.
Right.
So it was a lot of rappers who weren't making money. Where now you have a record, you could have had a record playing all over the place, not got no deal. You ain't make no money off the record, and you just well known. Yeah. Now your record to play on Spotify, you're going to get your check.
Right. And it was a crazy era, too, though, because it was like 50 Cent just blew New York open so bad. Like, he just, the whole game was just his at that point.
Yeah, he did.
It was like, if you wanted to be a relevant rapper, you had to be relevant in the context of why you either were down with 50 or beefed with 50.
50 had the story, he had the charisma, he had the music.
He had it all. He had
three things at one time.
Dre and Eminem behind him. I mean, it was just, it wasn't fair.
Yeah, but he got real hot without them. And then when they came into the picture, it was like, that was not fair, but you know?
Yeah.
He took the streets over on his own.
And then, but I mean, and he blew up off the mixtapes, but then all of a sudden he's selling 10 million copies of his debut and shit. Yeah, that was a crazy-ass time period. But I remember that was when I first moved to New York, 2003. So I would be going to all the, you know, Chinatown, fucking wherever, where you could get mixtapes and shit, and just buying, like, mixtapes that ended up having, like, they were supposed to have, like, 10 Joel Santana freestyles, and it would be, like, a bunch of shit I'd already heard with different song names and shit.
They had mixtape spots everywhere back then. So you had about 100 in the city or more.
Yeah.
Maybe about 200.
You think in, like, Chinatown you could still buy mixtapes at any of those spots?
Absolutely not. I'm a dude, no nobody. Everybody's gone. Music hurt everybody.
What a fucking shame.
Tina, Tequila, everybody. Everybody's gone.
That's crazy.
All the stores are gone.
Mm. And that's what's weird is because then it's like less of a physical presence for like the rap world or for, like you have less places where you could go that you could run into somebody that's into what you're into, you know?
And even back when I was started with Stretch, it was like a treat to hear something every Thursday and then you couldn't hear it again. You had to wait for them to play it again. If you ain't recorded yourself, it was no, yeah, I'm gonna go online and look for the song. That shit ain't exist.
That scarcity thing like made the whole game, because now when you think about it, it's like we could very easily sit here and watch new rap videos for the rest of the night or the rest of the week that we never seen before, and we're super jaded just looking for that little nugget of talent.
That's a fact. And then you see everybody's life, like there's no mystery.
Yeah.
I go on the gram, I fucking scroll down, I see your whole fucking life.
Yeah.
Back then it was mystery with artists. Like,
yeah.
You couldn't go, there was no gram. Like, you know, you had to just.
I mean, it must have been weird for you because you were more like closer to that life. To me, like, you know, Joel Santana, Cameron, 50 Cent, they're like untouchable gangster heroes that, like, you. I didn't know anybody like this in real life, you know? Like, superheroes at that time. The game's changed a lot now where kids want a rapper that's a lot like them. Yeah. It's weird. But with, like, better hair dye or, like.
Now, I mean, you can get on if you're talented. Now, before, it was super hard to get on.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's like, it's weird because a lot of people think that in the rap game that talent is irrelevant now. To me, talent matters way more now.
Talent is everything.
Because it doesn't matter if you're given a chance or not, you know?
Talent is everything. If you have good music, you always, anybody who has good music or puts out a good body of work will always make it. That's why I tell people, like, if you put out, people are going to listen to it at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's just about like being able to be honest enough to look at your product and decide if it actually is as good as you think it is, which very few people have an honest perspective on their own art, you know? Yeah. It's like the hardest thing to find because you kind of have to have this like bizarre self-confidence even before you actually are good in order to even be a rapper in the first place. Whoa. Yeah, so you're running around with Ransom trying to do his whole thing. Can we talk about this time period where he was like beefing with Joe Budden and stuff? Didn't he smack him at some point?
Yeah, that actually did happen. No, he didn't smack him. He went to a house where Joe Budden's is known to frequent.
Okay.
And somebody answered the door, and the gentleman who answered the door happened to get smacked.
Oh. But what, he just smacked the dude who opened the door because he was friends with him?
Basically. Basically couldn't find Joe, so you know that was the next closest thing. So you know it was just out of anger.
Smacking era.
It's
like
a bad situation, you know.
Yeah. How did that start though? Like, from do you care to discuss or remember?
Ransomman, Joe Buttons, you know, just city beef, people, just boys, really nothing.
Yeah.
Really started from nothing, really.
In retrospect, it was pretty.
I mean,
much Ransomman
ended up going to jail for that. He did, ended up doing 5 years for that, you know.
For the smacking.
Now for something else, for another situation.
Right.
Where he got caught with a firearm.
Right. Weren't they in a group together at one point?
Yeah.
What was it called?
18.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He started out with them two. Then he did his deal on Def Jam, and then Ransom and Hitchcock went together, and then Stack Bundles joined the mix, and that was how everybody was really running around with each other.
Yeah, that was a wild-ass era. Because that was like when, you know, everybody was started kind of trying to like just be able to fit into the landscape that was like opened up so much by like 50. And then it was like, who's going to be able to be like the rest of this pyramid?
Rest in peace, Stack Bundles. He definitely had a slot on that. He definitely would have been one of New York's top rappers.
Right. So you feel like that kind of changed the game in some way, or did that change the way you looked at the game?
He was like, he was the wave.
Right. And it's weird when you see somebody who's going up so quickly and you feel like he's going to be the next one, and then they get taken too early.
Next one was him and Max B.
Right, and then Max B, same thing, yeah.
Stacks had all the sauce, like, you know?
Crazy.
Like Stacks was the wave, like, you know? Rest in peace, Stack Bundles.
Max B was like the spirit of what was going to keep Dipset interesting
Max
and shit.
Max B was definitely waving.
Oh, yeah.
But Stacks would have been a top New York artist, hands down.
Right.
Max B, too. Don't get me wrong. He had the Stacks. He was just something special.
Yeah. Crazy. So then what happened with the whole Ransom thing? He got locked up, and then you sort of were like, fuck this music shit?
Yeah, I just gave up on the music. I mean, Stack Bundles got killed. Ransom's in jail. I just gave up on it.
So what were you doing to make a living at that time?
I was just doing what anybody else would do, just trying to survive.
Right.
Trying to, you know?
But were you doing very well for yourself?
I was doing okay. You know, I wasn't starving. I wasn't complaining.
Right. Well, so then what happens? You basically, like, how do you end up getting into the music business?
I was hanging out with Michael Kaiser a lot. But I would just hang out with him all the time, go to clubs. And
who's that?
My other man, Scott the Animal. Scott the Animal and Mike Kaiser, who's the president of Atlantic.
Right.
So we'd just go to clubs a lot. And I'd just hang out with him. And hanging out with him, I just started meeting more people. And the people I already knew from hanging out with Clue, like, you know, I was with Clue for 2-3 years, you know, doing a lot of things for his mixtapes.
So
all the people.
Oh, so you were just helping him out along the way?
I was just helping Clue out because I had Ransom.
Right.
And I used to run with Stack a lot.
Yeah.
So we just always used to be together.
Right.
So we'll be with Clue a lot. He'll be doing his mixtapes. We'll be telling him what to do, you know, just be inputting with him, just helping him out.
Right.
So after running around with Clue, and I started running around with Kais and Scott the Animal and just really hanging out with Kaiser. And then I met Salim Brojas. And now Salim, he was working at Warner. And he had Kirko Bangs.
Right.
So Kirko Bangs was his artist. He was doing good with Kirko. And then Lior was getting ready to leave with Ty Moskowitz to 300.
Right.
So I see Salim, and he's like, yeah, you know, you should come with me over here to 300. We're starting something new. You know, I think you'll be all right at this. So I just went over there with him, just took a chance.
You're like the rare guy who became an A&R who wasn't trying to become an A&R.
Nah, I was just really just out there just doing whatever. I mean, I'd have did whatever. I'd have been a radio guy. I was just trying to get money without risking my freedom.
Right. Were you getting sick of it at that point in terms of being in the streets?
I mean, I was seeing people make money who I thought were, you know, not finesses. And I'm like, oh, shit, if he could do this, I could do this.
Right.
You know, I definitely seen that, and I had an ear. Like, you know, I always listen to music.
You kind of fit, like, an interesting category because you're a dude who could have a conversation with a guy like Kodak Black, and it would be a normal conversation, but then you can also go and have a conversation with Mike Caren. And you can Absolutely. Have both of those conversations, and that's the problem, is that a lot of times it's hard to find people who can bridge the gap between the artists and the execs.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I get that sometimes, too. They're like, oh, you know, that's why you're able to do this stuff. That's what we got in common.
Yes, you know. That's right there.
That's why I always tell people, like, if you really like music or whatever and you want to be in the game, like, you got to get smart. Like, you got to get street smart. You got to get book smart. Like, as much information as you can have, the more likely you are to be able to serve multiple roles and be able to really do something, you know?
Kids got to understand is that this is a business.
Mm-hmm.
End of the day, it's art that you're selling something as a business. So you have to understand how business works. You want to reap the benefits of this business.
Yeah. So you go over to 300.
I go to 300.
And so what is the process like? Like, how do you get started in terms of a new label? There's a lot of pressure.
Go to 300. So now, Lior's a legend.
Yeah.
Ty Moskowitz is a legend. And Kevin Lyles is a legend.
Yeah.
So Salim is like, hey, you're going to be working with Kevin Lyles and Lior. So I'm like, man, that's bullshit, man. How the fuck I'm going to be working with these guys? So I go with Salim. I go my first day. I see Leo and everybody. I go to Salim's office. Salim is like, look, you're going to be working with me. You're going to be working under me. I'm going to teach you how to do this, different perspective on how to find artists and search artists and how we sell music and the process of selling music. So I went in there with him for about 3 months. And like, he taught me how he did it, you know?
Right.
Find artists. This is what I do. you know, this is what I'm looking for. This is what we're looking for. This is the metrics of this, this and that. So I just.
You feel like you learned like an incredible amount from him?
I mean, he knows a lot though. He's good. He's good at this shit.
Right.
So, yeah, I learned a lot from
him. And that's the information people keep real close to their chest, I feel like, is like how they actually find artists.
Man took me in. I got to thank him because without him, I wouldn't be here. Shout out Celine.
Right.
The man took me from the street and took me to his office and took a big gamble with me where nobody would even think of taking a gamble like that. So he seen something in me that made him take that gamble, and I'm in debt to him in this business forever. You know, he took me from nowhere. Who knows where the fuck I'd have been without that right now.
People don't usually like move around between, like if you're a drug dealer or you're in the streets, it's very rare that you then like somehow transcend that.
Fucking jerk on and he could take your money, you know?
It's, yeah.
You know, that's basically what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he definitely put me in a position where I changed my life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Took me to 300. I was over there, so he was just teaching me.
What was the vibe starting out at 300? Was it like just a huge amount of motivation with all these giant brains all in the same room?
I mean, it was good because, I mean, they had started out, they had Thug and Migos.
Right.
So off the rip, we was good already. Like, you know, we got Thug, we got Migos, we doing all right. They got big records out. Thug is doing good. Everybody's doing good. So, I mean, it was a good vibe up there. Lior was up there every day, motivation. You know, you see Kevin, you see Tars. So, you know, it was motivating, actually.
Yeah. What was their goal? Was their goal to have a whole bunch of, like, smaller artists signed as well at that time, or were they just going for these big superstars?
I mean, Lior just likes music. You know, he just wanted to sign good music.
Right.
You know, they just wanted to sign good music. That was it. Like,
so how'd you get on the path to finding your first artist, or how'd that progress go?
I was in my neighborhood, and I was already working at 300. I was in my neighborhood. I was just hanging out, and kid comes up to me. He's like, "Yo, there's this little fucking bullshit open mic in this taco spot." So I'm like, "All right, fucking, let me go over there."
Was that part of your usual progress of finding artists?
Nah, with the never taco spot. I didn't want to go over there. I just ain't had shit to do. It was like on a hum. Like I was in the hood and I just happened to go in there. So bang, I run into him, I see him. So he's like, "Yo, let's go to T-Neck." So we go to T-Neck, we go to this Mexican restaurant. So we go to the Mexican restaurant. I'm up there, I see a couple people perform, you know, we chilling. Then I see this kid come up there, motherfucker's missing an eye. I'm like, who the fuck is this? But then he got a hot record, but you know, he got a good positive vibe, so I'm like, oh, who the fuck is this?
Wait, but you knew about the record or you just heard him perform?
I never seen him, heard nothing. Never seen him, nothing. He didn't know who the fuck he was.
Right.
I see him, so I'm like, oh shit, Fetty Wap, like, what was Fetty Wap, like.
So how big was your confidence at that moment, like, in him? Because a lot of times you'll see somebody and you'll see a seed of talent in him, but you don't feel like it's 100%. Were you 100% this kid's a star?
I went to my house. So it was like 4 o'clock in the morning. I rolled a big ass grand blunt. So I'm smoking it. So I just remember his name. I'm like, Fetty Wap, motherfucker. So I type his name in. So the Trap Queen shit comes on, man. Mind you, this shit got 5,000 views on it. So I'm looking at that shit come on. I see the car, he come on, dirty ass crib. I'm like, what the fuck? Then the camera go to his face, this motherfucker's missing an eye. I'm like, what the fuck? What the fuck happened to him? Somebody shot him? Like, I'm intrigued now. I'm like, yo, hold on, fuck the Trap Queen shit. I don't care about none of that shit. What the fuck happened to this nigga eye?
Right.
That's what the fuck I want to know. What the fuck happened to him?
Right. That's how everybody felt at first.
I was intrigued. Yeah. Like, then I started listening to the music. And I'm like, nah, this shit fire. Like, this shit fire. Then he had a couple other fucking old freestyles on it. And I'm like, yo, this nigga flow is fire. Like, hold on.
Mm-hmm.
So I called him. I started fucking with him. I just got cool with him. I played him for the label. They was like, we don't know. Kevin Lyles was like, yo, I like him. Stay fucking with him. Like, I think he's a star.
Was that frustrating? Because you had so much confidence in him, and then your bosses weren't as excited as you were?
I mean, nah, because I ain't understand the business, so it wasn't. I ain't give a fuck. Like, oh, I might bring people up here. They don't sign them. They sign them. I don't care. Like, I ain't understand points. I ain't understand none of that shit.
Okay.
You know, I ain't get to that level yet. You know, okay. I ain't know what the fuck was going on.
I'm not at that level yet either. I still got to get educated.
Like, oh, you sign him? He don't want to sign? Sign? No. Yeah, no. So, I was already real cool with him.
Uh-huh.
So now the record starts going. So I bring him back up there. Mm-hmm. And they negotiate him. But by the time they negotiate, he's getting hot now. Now people fucking with him. But he kept it 1K with me. He was like, nah, I fuck with you, so I'm going to just sign to y'all.
Yeah.
So then we signed him. I was still interning.
Uh-huh.
So now I'm inside. I ain't getting paid for these more. Now we selling a lot of records. Now he's selling millions of records. Now I'm still interning up there. So I just slid to Atlantic.
Mm-hmm. So 300 right away, you were just like, yo, I need to start getting paid this or this. And
I mean, nah, not right away. Not right away, because I respected Leo and I was making money.
Right.
So I still ain't give a fuck.
What, they gave you a salary, but they weren't cutting you in on the record?
I was making money, so I ain't care.
Oh, right.
I was getting my bread, so I ain't care. Like, I wasn't worried about that shit. I was more hyped that I was around Leo and Kevin Lyles and them. I seen these motherfuckers in books and in movies.
Right.
I'm going to be around them. I'm more hyped that I'm around them.
Yep.
Like, oh shit, I'm with Leo. Like,
but then somebody starts selling. Somebody sells millions of records. All of a sudden, you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah, but then I see everybody getting. I'm like, oh, all right, now people selling records. Now what's going on?
And now you got a track record.
Yeah, so I have a meeting with Leo, but I'm still interning. So I have a meeting with Leo, so I'm like, oh, like, what you gonna do? Like, I'm making your company a lot of money. Like, what are we gonna do? So I was like, you know, like, if you don't want me to stay here, like, I'll go to Atlantic because I know Mike Kaiser. Like, right. Mike Kaiser's my man. Like, now I already got something clout behind me. Like, I could go up there easily. So then he was just like, hey, let's set you up in Atlantic. So I just went to Atlantic. Shout out to Leo for that.
Right. So but he didn't try to win you over or anything? You didn't feel like you were that in demand at the time?
He was like, yo, like, you mad aggressive, and I know you're going to be great, and, like, you know, just go out there, go to a major and do your thing. I know you could go out there and really fucks it up.
So how'd you structure your shit with Atlantic?
I just went to Atlantic and they just hired me as an A&R.
Uh-huh. So as an A&R for Atlantic, how was it different than doing that job for 300?
Atlantic was paying me to do it.
Right.
300 wasn't paying me, so it was a fucking big difference. Like, you know,
but
check.
Did you fully understand the game and how you wanted to go about structuring the way you signed people at that time?
I still didn't care because I care more about music and the artist, so I ain't even care about that shit.
Right.
I really wasn't thinking about it. I was thinking more about helping the artist that I'm signing.
Right.
Like, you know, I'm signing people. They coming from the inner city. They got situations where it's fucked up and it's hard for them, and I'm more living with them and more living their lives, so I'm not even thinking about myself.
Right.
I'm just more thinking about, let me get all this structure and I'm going to be all right because I can do this. Like, I can sign. Like, I got an ear. I'm good with business. I be good to the artists I got. So why wouldn't people fuck with me? Like, I just keep signing artists and keep giving people opportunities.
Right. So after Fetty, who else did you start working with?
After Fetty, the next person I started working with was Kodak Black.
And so how'd you get into that? How'd you sign him?
I just came across him on the net. And I fucking seen him. And I was fucking mesmerized by the little motherfucker. I was just looking at him like, who the fuck is this?
What video was it?
Motherfucker, Skrilla.
Skrilla? That was my first song I heard from him, too.
I was like, oh, shit. And then the No Flocking. Mm-hmm. Like,
but he was out like 2 years before that. Remember that old-ass video?
They wasn't signing people. Like,
yeah.
That ran. Back then, it was still somebody still putting somebody on.
Yeah.
If Ross wasn't putting you on, or Jay, or Dr. Dre, people still weren't breaking out. Still weren't any breakout artists.
Right.
The only one that come out was French, and a lot of people helped to get French to that point.
Right.
It wasn't just French just coming out by himself and doing it.
Right.
It was a lot of people helped him, and then Nicki. A lot of people helped Nicki get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just, I'm going to put a song out on the internet and it's going to go. Nah, we're going to do this methodically. We're going to do these records. I got these features. I got these people helping me.
At that time period, that was like when Gucci was putting everybody on too, you know? Absolutely. Like, he created so
Gucci
many...
Gucci did a mixtape with French.
Yeah.
People don't remember. You think that shit ain't... Hell yeah, that shit helped French.
It's crazy because when we're sitting here as A&Rs or whatever and we're talking about Fetty Wap, it's so hard to imagine a time period in which Trap Queen wasn't enough to already get somebody. You know, right now, if you had Trap Queen, it don't matter if it had 5,000 plays, it's like you're getting a $1 million deal.
Fetty Wap broke the mold for everybody because at that time, people still weren't really getting deals like that off the internet.
Right.
It was still scarce. Like,
it was still
know.
Like, oh, he's a SoundCloud rapper.
I don't know if it's going to go, this and that. Like, Fetty Wap really broke it open for everybody.
Right.
And then Kodak Black. And then those, when people started seeing those artists being successful, Because they were still artists with millions of views who weren't getting signed. Now, if you got a million views, they offer you $1 million. It wasn't like that 3 years ago.
Right.
Where if you had a couple people who still want to see, like, nah, he needs a hit single, he needs this, he needs that.
Right.
Now, with the monetization of Spotify, now you have to pay these artists.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's just talk about when you saw Kodak. Like, what how'd you feel? Because, like, to me now,
I felt like he was a fucking superstar.
Superstar.
And then when I met him, I was like, nah, I could just watch this motherfucker. I didn't need a TV. Right. I could just watch Kodak all day. I don't need no TV.
Yeah.
This motherfucker is the most entertaining human being I ever met.
Right. But did you feel like, you know, because somebody like Kodak, it's like, yeah, he's super entertaining, super talented, but he's also troublesome. Like, you know, as soon as you start dealing with him.
I don't judge anybody. Like, I got my own shit I go through. Like, I don't, as long as you show respect and we respect each other, I don't even think about that shit.
Right. But a rapper can't be too much of a headache for you to want to get involved?
Nah, man. You know what type of shit you got to do for me not to get involved with you? Like, I don't, these people, you got to understand, man, these are a lot of kids who grew up without fathers and in situations where they ain't have families and people looking out for them, so you can't judge them like that. You can't judge them how if you were raised in a household with two parents and you know right from wrong. A lot of these motherfuckers don't know, so you can't. Right. You gotta help teach them. You can't run away from them. You gotta run to them like, nah, this, I'm gonna help you out. Nah, this is the right way to do shit. Like, you know, you've been doing shit. You've been taught wrong.
Do you feel like you always had that element in your personality where you wanted to help out young kids who needed an opportunity?
I mean, yeah, I always helped out.
Yeah.
Always, even in the hood, I always helped everybody. I always made sure everybody was all
right. Right, yeah. When I look at it, like, I feel like I have a lot of that in my personality where I just want to help out a talented kid. And I've, a lot of ways I feel like I grew up listening to my mom talk about working at the library all day, every day, at like a basically like a community college. So every day I would always hear her talking about, like, oh, yeah, this girl who got two kids and she's 18 and blah, blah, blah. And she's like, you know, still getting her classes done and shit like that. So I always was just kind of like consumed by a lot of those stories, you know? So, all right, Kodak. Then, how do you just signed him to Atlantic like super early on or what?
I went to go see him. I went to Gainesville. He had a show. I went to see this motherfucker and the whole club. There must have been 3,000 people in there.
Uh-huh.
Mind you, he wasn't really that famous. Yo, the club knew, he did like 15 songs. Yo, the club knew everything word for word for word. I was like, nah, this is crazy. When I went back to New York, I'm like, yo, they know all his shit word for word. They was like, for real? I'm like, yeah, Kodak Black, bro. And people still ain't. And I'm telling people in New York, like, yo, Kodak is the wave. And people like, where that? I'm like, yo, this motherfucker special, right?
But Atlantic wasn't trying to jump on it right away?
I mean, Atlantic can jump on it because I was there. Like, you know, I'm the one to go. Just so you know, I'll bring you up there and get you a deal right now. Like, you know?
You're too late.
As an artist.
Right, okay. Oh, okay.
As
an
artist right now. I'm like, yo, I got Adam. We did 6 records. Let's sign him, Craig and Craig.
I mean, he needs to do that, yeah. Yeah, well, now at this point, your fucking track record is so crazy that it, like, I feel like you have just crazy amount of sway over people in the industry. But did that scare you that, like, you're running around telling everybody how dope Kodak is before you sign a deal? Is that stuff you have to hold back?
Man, that's my fucking opinion.
Yeah.
If I feel somebody's dope, that's my fucking opinion. He ain't got to sell no records. He ain't got to do shit.
I feel that way.
He's fucking dope. That's it.
I'll find an artist and be thinking about signing him, but it's like I already have a big ass platform. As soon as I tweet about him, it's on a lot of people's radars.
Like him, sign him. If you feel like you can help his career, sign him.
Sometimes I feel like I need to like throttle my enthusiasm about artists so that I don't just let the cat out of the bag.
I can't even follow people on the gram. Like it's hard for me to even move around. Everybody looks at what I want to do.
Yeah. That's a very
good
point.
I got a couple decoys. I done, you know, acted like I was going to sign some people and let them go to another label and they would pay triple and I'm laughing over it. Like, I didn't even want to sign a guy. I just wanted to try to lose money.
Could you do that and cut yourself in on the deal anyway?
I don't do that shit, man.
That sounds kind of sketchy. Sounds illegal.
You know, like, I want artists to get all their money because I want them to like me. Once you start taking money from motherfuckers, they don't like you no more.
Right.
I
want to get all your bread. So you never take a management percentage from an artist?
I don't manage nobody. I'm just, you know.
But is there a way that these deals would be structured so that you'd be taking the money out of their end, but you always structure it so that you're taking money out the label's end?
You could do whatever you want if you tell somebody.
Right.
But you know, it is what it is.
But it's like you just like to avoid actually having to have the artist.
It's unethical when you work for a record label. That's why. So, you know.
It's unethical to what?
To take money from anybody when you work for a record label.
Oh, okay.
It's just unethical. So, you know, you just shouldn't do it.
Right.
And you should want your artists to get all their money so, you know, they'd be happy. More money somebody got, the happier they are.
For sure. So after Kodak, was it just straight to X?
Nah, PNB Rock. Shout out PNB Rock, man.
How'd you find that one?
I was fucking on Instagram, and I just seen him singing, and I thought he was fucking spectacular. Of an angel. Of a ghetto angel.
He really is good.
You know, and then I met him, and he's a fantastic person. His story speaks for itself, his resilience, you know, what he had to go through in his life to make it.
Right.
So where he's at now, you know, if you can't fall in love with that story and how hard somebody works to go with what they're doing, then, you know, I don't know what the fuck else you're looking for.
But was he really small at that time?
When I signed him?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he was in Philly doing his thing. I mean, to me, he was always a fucking star. You know, all the bitches always loved him. He had a lot of shit going on, so... Never small. PNB Rock's the fucking man from day one.
Not small like that, but, you know, a less popular artist.
Nah, but PNB's my man. Shout out PNB Rock. Nah, but he was always doing his thing, man, ever since I met him. Like, you know, he always had good records and good music. I met him right out of jail, you know?
Right.
And he was always motivated. He always been positive. He never, he always, yeah, let me go get this. Let me go make these records. And, you know, never, this and that. This fucked me up. I was in jail. He never fucking complains. He just,
You said that you're like, you know, he's been in jail, but he doesn't act like he's been in jail. Like, he's not always trying to overwhelm you with how
jail guy, like, you know, over my yo, and then I've been in it. Nah, it's PNB ain't about that shit, man. PNB's an artist. He's about making music. It isn't his past, like, you know.
Yeah,
I'm real proud of him. He carries himself.
You said that you couldn't sign an artist who was fake.
Nah, you had to, and I don't mean you got to shoot somebody.
Right.
You have to be real to yourself.
Right.
You're a fucking nerd and you fucking read books all day and that's what you rap about and you're real to yourself, I give you a deal.
Would you assign Lil Dicky?
Yeah, because he's real to himself.
Right.
Lil Dicky's real to himself. He raps about what he does. Funny shit.
But it's far away from what you actually are probably going to be sitting around listening to. So would you have a hard time making that connection to the music, you think?
I mean, at that point, then I'm in executive mode. I meet Lil Dicky and I like him and I feel like his records could sell and he's real to himself, why wouldn't I help him?
Right.
I'd be wrong of me not to help him.
Right.
Why? Because he's Lil Dicky. Motherfucker's a human being. You got to help everybody.
Is it weird, though, for you? Like, it's sometimes weird for me because there could be a new artist and I could have three different opinions on him. I could be like, I love his music. I want to fucking listen to him all the time. You could be like, I want to sign him. This motherfucker is like the one. Or I could be like, he would be interesting to do an interview and shit, even if I don't listen to him and I don't want to sign him. There's like a lot of different hats you could be wearing when you give an opinion on an artist.
Some people, I like him enough to give him advice. I have preference of artists that I like to sign, but some people I like and I won't sign, but I give you advice so you can better your situation.
Right.
You know, I can't sign everybody. There's a lot of people I like I can't sign.
Right.
But if I meet you and I speak to you, I'll give you advice to help better your situation.
Right.
Which that's better than me signing you.
Yeah.
Actually.
Honest advice is like, yeah, because a lot of people, signing you is not a gift.
Honest advice, bro. You know, you can see how good X is doing that.
A lot of people shouldn't sign, though. You know? Or would you say a lot of people shouldn't sign?
It depends. Like, you see, you can't say that because some people need backing. Some people need a structure.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are not equipped to work as a label. Some people actually need a label to help them take them to the next level.
Right.
Some people have a team around and they're smart enough to do it themselves and not really do it themselves, just act like they're doing it themselves because at the end of the day, somebody's always funding it.
Mm.
You know, everybody talks about, who's really independent?
Yeah.
How many people are really independent?
Dudes who aren't that popular.
You know, so it's like...
It's hard to get past a certain level if you don't really have like a...
I mean, even Chance is huge, but look, he don't play the radio, so how big really is he?
Right.
How big really is he for being Chance?
Yeah. Do you feel like... Yeah, because if he had a big label situation, he'd probably be able to do something a lot.
You know, everybody uses him as an example, but he's a bad example because at the end of the day, he's wealthy.
Right.
His manager's very wealthy. So now people say, Chance the Rapper made it, but they're not saying that he's wealthy and his manager's wealthy. Now, when there's another artist who's independent who's not wealthy and his manager's not wealthy, they don't have the resources that Chance and his team had that got him in that position where he could have been independent and sold records to get a buzz that big. Some people might not have the platform or make it that big, so they would need a label to get to that level.
Right.
So, you know, that's why some people say, I don't need the label. Sometimes you do.
Right.
Sometimes you don't. It's a gamble you take. This is a business. Depends what you want to do for a business. You could come out with a shirt and not want to sell it everywhere.
Right.
That's cool. That's your fucking business. You want to sell your shirt in 2 or 3 places? Keep your shirt there. Some person might have a shirt and want to sell it all over the fucking world.
Right.
It depends what you want
to
do.
Yeah. There's a lot of different ways to take the business. But do you ever look at it like you feel like you could go outside of something like Atlantic and be able to do something that would be more profitable or more beneficial for the artist if you did go in a more independent route, like a lot of people have kind of experimented with like smaller label situations now that sort of...
I mean, it all depends, Adam, on who the person is and how the team is.
Right.
Every artist is different. You might go out the limb with an artist, his team don't know what they're doing, he doesn't listen to you, he doesn't know what he's doing, he drives the shit to the fucking ground. You might have an artist that's mediocre, but he has a good team, he listens, and he's going to make it to the next level. So it's all different.
How do you deal with the fact that it's so insanely competitive now to sign artists in particular?
I don't care. If I come and get you, I'm going to go hard for you.
Right.
You can sign to anybody. You can chase a check. You can do whatever you want because it's your career. You can bring your shirts wherever you want. If I got your clothes, I'm going to make sure your clothes is good.
Right.
No, that's it.
But so now you're pushing Leaky Bands in particular. Is he way... Because he's not as far along as Kodak Black was when you discovered Kodak.
I mean, Leaky's 15. He's from New York. He's from the Lower East Side. And he's true to himself.
Yeah.
So now there's a lot of kids now that's riding everybody else's wave or I want to do this and I want to do that. I want to look like him. I want to look like that guy. Leaky Bands is 15 and he's himself. So that's somebody I would want to give a chance to.
Right.
I'd like to give somebody like him a chance, somebody who's themselves, somebody who doesn't sound like everybody else, who's not sounding like the normal. I want to be like this guy and be like that guy. I want to be like myself.
But you went out and found him. He's someone who didn't even have music videos out, right?
I mean, sometimes we ain't all. Sometimes you got to go help people. Sometimes like, you got to find the talent.
You were pushing Kodak and even had a hard time getting them to confirm Kodak. But at that point, like Skrilla was a good music video. He had a bunch of good music videos out at that point. Like he was... You look at it from today's perspective, Kodak had laid it all out. Like, look at this. I'm the fucking man. He had made it so obvious from our perspective now. But our perspective now has changed so much from four, however many years ago. When
it's a different game now.
Yeah.
Now you get a little record and you stream and you think you fucking the king of the game.
Now if you got a million plays on a song on YouTube, it's like you have definitely had all these label conversations and they definitely have done some real serious analysis of what your talent is.
Yeah, but that's why there's a lot of artists who... flopping now and not doing anything.
Yeah. Do you feel like we're in a bubble in the sense that all these artists are getting signed and then a huge percentage of them aren't going to do shit commercially and then that's going to make it so it's harder to get signed? That's
at the end of the day, Adam, how many good albums could really be produced every year?
Out of all these artists that are getting signed,
how many good albums, great albums could we get produced every year?
Right.
Not many. So now who's going to drop the great albums? That's how you separate these guys.
Right.
Everybody can have a cool little single. I could go get my fucking rapper kit, do what the fuck I got to do to look like a rapper and, you know, melodize and sing. Fuck that. I don't care about none of that shit. Who the fuck is going to sell me their story?
Yeah.
Whose album do I want to listen to? Whose fucking story do I care about? That's what I get into. It's not about the hype of one record or, yo, he looks cool. No, I don't care about none of that shit. I'm going to see through that shit.
Right. Because you were saying you like to think about the 6 albums that the artist could do.
I want to get 6 albums out of somebody.
Right.
So for me to get 6 albums out of you have to be some type of an artist.
Right. And that's what's...
some type of an artist.
That's what's crazy about a lot of these dudes that you signed is that they're all pretty much dudes that you can imagine having like many, many albums. A lot of them have already.
Absolutely. You have to sign all. You have to sign poets. You have to sign writers.
Right.
Can't just sign somebody who's going in the booth, blah, 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 blah. Nah, just once or twice is going to sound cool, but how many songs are you going to make? What the fuck are you going to talk about on these songs?
Exactly.
What's it going to be? Yeah. And if you don't have life experiences, if you don't, how the fuck are you going to talk about anything?
But a lot of people would say a lot of people in the game right now who are popping are fake as fuck. You agree or disagree?
If you're fake, you're not going to sell any records. You probably get a single or two. But whose album is selling this fake? Nobody.
I don't know who's fake or not, but I mean, I got to assume a decent percentage of the dudes who are popping are fake, right?
I mean.
Or maybe they just fulfill the role over time.
I mean, there's not a lot of albums selling.
Hmm. All right, we got to talk about how you signed X.
I signed X. Shout out to you, because when I met X, you were the first name he said. So shout out to you on that one.
Shout out to me for following through on all that. You know.
It was locked up in the same jail as Kodak. I just went to see him a couple times. You know, when I met him, I felt he was very, very intelligent, like on a different level of intelligence.
Right.
And I just liked him. I just told him, I was like, bro, you're going to be a fucking star, bro. Like, get out of this jail situation. I was like, mark my words, you in jail now, but you'll be a millionaire in a year.
Right.
But he believed, he's smart, so he knows.
Right.
So I tried to take him to Atlantic, with the charges that he had, they didn't want to take the risk, which I understand. You know, there's certain things, you know, you got to respect.
Right.
So now, he had a record going already. He had a fan base. So now, he could do different types of deals because he has negotiation power.
Uh-huh.
He has a single going already. It's already platinum. So what are you going to offer this man? You have to offer this man something respectable.
Right.
Because he already made himself a platinum artist without anybody invested in him. So now if you want to make money with X, you have to pay.
Right.
Because he did it himself. But there's not another artist that I don't think that ever had a platinum record without a record deal.
You don't think? That was like, that really broke it open that much?
I mean, who else? Without a label, without a label ever backing them.
And for you in particular, because you have all these talented artists, but you had to sign them and get them in the machine before they really started to blow up, whereas X had already basically done it, right?
X already had the fan base. He had everything going for him.
Were you the first A&R that went to see him in jail? Or were other people bothering him around that time?
I think so. I think I was really the first person to see him. Now, X is my family. I love X, man. X is a great individual.
Yeah.
Shout out to X, man.
Yeah, I love him too.
Really, really, you know, pushing.
Talking to him is very inspirational because it's like he's already been through so fucking much, and the fact that he's still like, the fact that his music is improving so much and his mind state. Anybody who knows him can tell that he's just like become a different person over the last year, you know. But how excited were you about the music when you met him? Because that's got to be a pain in the ass to like go see somebody in jail, arrange, get a time and everything. Like the fact that you actually went out of your way to do that is kind of significant.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I flew to court for him. Like, X, you already know. X know what it is. When I heard X's music, I thought he was fucking incredible because he played me every type of record.
Yeah.
He played me a punk record. He played me a rock record. He played me a trap record. Playing a record for the bitches. He played me a singing record. And then when he caught me, this is where he caught me. When he played me a 90s rap record.
Which he always has a couple on each project,
but this is what you got to understand. You know how hard it is to make a 90s rap record?
Mm-hmm. And sound new and different,
think
interesting.
About that.
Yeah.
How hard is it to make a Tribe Called Quest type record? And he was doing all, he did every genre.
Right.
He did it good. That's when I knew he was a fucking genius.
You help work on that first album with him, or you sort of...
He's a fucking genius. He does everything himself.
Right. So are you not the type of A&R sessions with him,
I just hanged out with him. I can't even...
You're not the type of A&R, though, that's trying to get in there and really, like, micromanage a product?
I sign artists that are true artists. So if you sign a true artist, how the fuck are you going to fuck their art up?
Right.
I'm not trying to fuck nobody's art up.
You don't think you have, like... opinions or way of looking at things that could be beneficial sometimes, or do you
producers in there? I bring artists to work with artists, and right. They create, and I listen to what they create. I'm not an artist, so for me to tell you what to do would be wrong of me.
Right,
it'd be an injustice for me to tell you what to do when I don't know. I'm not an artist. I didn't create that. Now, if your flow's off, I'm gonna tell you. Yeah, your flow's off on that.
Right,
that I could tell you because that's
in your gut.
Yeah, I don't like what you're talking about. That's about it. But I'm not. Nah, I sign artists.
Right.
So if you sign true artists, how the fuck am I going in and tell somebody that's a true artist what to do when I'm not an artist?
So you never really tried to be a rapper or make beats or anything?
No. I tried to DJ.
Yeah.
It didn't work out.
That's cool. Do you think that's an important part of why your perspective is so good on music, is the fact that you don't know how to make music yourself? I sometimes feel that way.
I just know how to listen to music.
Right.
And I know what's hot. That's it. I know what's hot. I know who's hot. I know who could go it, but I don't know how to make music.
But think about, like, if you were Joe Budden, no offense, then... You kind of like, he has a perspective on rapping because he's a very talented rapper and he's been rapping for a long time. I feel like it would be hard for somebody like Joe Budden as an A&R to hear Lil Pump and be like, yo, that's the shit.
But you see now, Joe Buttons, if you got to, you got to see what perspective he's listening to it. Is he listening to it to get market share, or is he listening to it for his own enjoyment to sell it now?
Right.
You know, is what part of the job are you doing?
Right. But if you're deep into, like, if you have that technical knowledge, like, I feel like if I was some masterful beat maker, it'd be hard for me to listen to some raw-ass song that's amazing, but the beat is kind of low-key trash, and still be able to realize, like, nah, this is it, like, regardless.
I mean, it's probably trash to you. Because we're older, but to a kid who's 14, 15 that it's supposed to be meant for, probably not trash.
What do you drive around in your car listening to most of the time? New shit, or you listen to classics?
I listen to a lot of my artist shit and a lot of Lox shit.
The Lox is like exactly what I was thinking of. I'm like, you listen to Lox and Wu-Tang still or nah?
Nah, I used to listen to them, but not no more. Like, I was listening to Black Moon last week all week.
Mm-hmm.
Into the Stage. Like, you know,
right.
Like all types of shit.
I go back to a little bit of older rap, but for the most part, I'm on the new shit. It's like, I want to listen to, you know, new shit. Even if it's not going to be the best, it's like, I still just need to be hearing something new.
I listen to a lot of my older shit.
I fucked up my brain. That's how I really feel. And that's why I'm addicted to somebody like Greedo, who just puts out a crazy-ass amount of music. And it's
out here killing.
You always got something Greedo. New. Somebody like Greedo, too, where it's like, you know him well enough that you can, like, appreciate what he's saying on, like, a more nuanced level. Like, I'm sure you could listen to, like, a bunch of random Kodak songs that might not necessarily stand out to somebody else, but you know him so well that it's like, you
it's
know,
a good story. Yeah. Like, it's a good story. I know he's telling a story, and I like it.
Once you know a rapper and he's talking about some shit and he says something that you know really means a lot to him, and, like, it might not stand out to everybody else, but it means a lot to you, that's, like, that's a different level, you know?
Kodak can do 8 songs a night.
Right.
A lot of people can't do that.
No.
Kodak will write you 8 records a night and go in the booth and do them.
Greedo's one of them, too.
There's a couple of artists like that. Wayne, but not a lot. You have to be a true artist to do that shit, because that's a lot of writing.
Because where does all that shit come from?
Exactly. Like, what the fuck are you writing about? Like, that's a lot of shit to just go in the booth and talk.
And it's like a certain mentality, too, because you have to be willing to, like, go in there and actually see the song through. You can't just start rapping on it and then be like, nah, this ain't the one. Like, you got to actually, like, get something down and, like, because you know that your perspective later on is going to be a lot more important than how you feel right then in the moment. But somebody like Kodak or Greedo, I feel like they love themselves a lot. Like, they love what they have to say, and you have to have that, like, unbelievable amount of self-confidence in order to be able to be good at that job.
I mean, Greedo's working hard out here, though, man. Like, he's on everything. He's saying what the fuck he feels.
He's acting like he's on borrowed time. Like, he knows he might not be here too long doing this, so you got to...
I mean, no, we all on borrowed time, so you better go hard while you're out here, because you never know when you ain't out here.
He might be reaching the limit on his borrowed time, like, a lot faster than some other people, though. So he like, has that, you know, when they talk about Pac.
Greedo, man.
Yeah.
Need him out here.
We need him out here.
Keep talking this shit, man. Make the game interesting.
I don't know if those judges in Texas are going to be as forgiving as us, though.
We're going to pray for Greedo, man.
For sure. So, all right. After X, who else have you worked with? When did A Boogie come in?
A Boogie came in before X.
Okay. Like,
after PNB Rock, A Boogie shit came in. Me and I went to PNB Rock was doing a show in the Bronx. And we seen A Boogie perform. And we just, A Boogie's a cool dude. Shout out A Boogie. And we just started fucking with A Boogie from then on, like, you know?
PNB and him had a real organic relationship.
PNB are brothers, you know?
Right.
They got a real organic, cool relationship. Like, you know, they fuck with each other heavy.
Right. And so was that, again, just easy to get that deal done because you just saw his talent, like, way early on?
I mean, I just liked him. When I first seen him, I was already trying to sign him.
Right.
Because I went to the Bronx and he performed, and everybody in that club knew the words to the song. And, you know, if you're from New York, you know, motherfuckers in New York is haters.
Yeah.
So if you could get 10 people in New York to chant your song, you fucking some type of hot.
Right.
So, you know, I seen the whole club was chanting this shit. I was like, oh, all right, this A Boogie kid is pretty hot. So, you know, I just wanted to sign him right away.
Mm-hmm. Is there anybody that you tried really hard to sign that didn't work out that you kind of think about?
I tried. When I first started working at Atlantic, my first A&R meeting, now, mind you, I go in there, and, you know, everybody's looking at me like, yo, why the fuck they hired this guy? Like, you know how it is. Like, you know, you go somewhere, I'm not an industry dude, so I ain't know anybody in there.
They probably all been to college and shit, so that's immediate. There's like a wall between you.
Yeah. Shout out to everybody that got degrees, and I wish I had one. I'm going to try to buy one, but don't get no bread, buy them, put it on my wall, but I ain't got one yet, but you know.
Right.
So then I go in there, right? So then I play. I'm not going to say no names or who said what. But they know. You know, you listening. You know what the fuck you said. So I played 21 Savage. Everybody in the room just looks at me like, what the fuck is this? Like, why would you play this shit for? Like, yo, but they really telling me this shit. Now I'm getting mad. Like, I'm in my head. Like, yo, these motherfuckers want to fight or something? Or like,
right.
Like, they could just say they don't like it, but these motherfuckers going in on me. Like, why? And I was just like, yo, look, bro.
Like, they were going in on you, like, really telling you were wrong?
Why would you play this in this meeting? Like, what's wrong with you? I'm like in my head, like, what the fuck is y'all motherfuckers, dumb motherfuckers talking
about? Was this the Slaughter tape already out, or is this before that?
It was Red Ops, because I fucked with Sonny Digital.
Right.
So Sonny Digital put me on to him early. So I'm like, fuck it, I'm going to just play him in the A&R. I mean, I know it's going to go. This motherfucker got swag on 1,000. Like, his shit is really, like, I just see it in him.
Yeah.
So I play him. So everybody's going in the room like, yo, this shit is, I don't know what the fuck you watching. I don't know why you bringing this in this room for. Like, I'm looking at these motherfuckers like, flex, like, oh, shit. So nobody, just this and that, I'm like, I ain't even going to say nobody likes him because you got to be a stupid motherfucker not to like 21 Savage.
Right.
And I don't want to call nobody no stupid motherfuckers, but y'all know who the fuck y'all is.
But is that how you felt? Like, straight up, like, what the fuck am I even doing here if I got to answer to people like this who don't know shit?
Nah, I was just like, these motherfuckers dumb as shit if they don't sign this man. Like,
yeah.
Like, he really ain't had no buzz or nothing, but I know, like, I'm bringing this motherfucker, I'm bringing you in here. Like, you think, what you think I'm bringing in here? Like, I'm bringing this guy in, he's going to sell some fucking records. Come on, what the fuck is wrong with y'all?
Right.
So then I played another record right after that. And my man brought, Tax Stone had brought it to me. Shout out Tax Stone. He had brought me the song. He's like, yo, this motherfucker sounds like Future, but this shit is a hit. So I played it as Panda. So I'm like, yo, this shit is, it is a hit. Like, you know, you can't deny it. So I played that shit and everybody laughed me out the room. Like, oh, this just sound like Future's garbage. I said, all right, I got something for these motherfuckers. So, you know, that was my first two people I played at Atlantic.
Wow.
Shout out Designer and shout out 21.
So then you brought Designer. Did you still get him signed?
Nah, I didn't get him signed. Oh. After like 2 weeks after that, Steven Victor got involved with him. And then Steven Victor took him.
Right. That's bananas right there. Well,
no, shout out Tax Stone. Tax Stone brought that to me super early.
We got to talk about that. How'd you meet Tax Stone?
Man, I met Tax Stone. I must have met Tax Stone like 7 years ago or more, 8 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And I just was running around with Tax Stone for no motherfucking apparent reason because we ain't do no music or nothing. I just started hanging out with him.
Uh-huh.
Just started hanging out with him every day for no reason.
But, I mean, you're like, your job is that you're a good judge of character and talent. And it's funny to me because to me, Tax is
motherfucking as entertaining as Kodak. When I met him, I'm like, nah, this motherfucker ever. I'm hanging out with him every day.
Yeah.
This guy's too entertaining not to be around him.
He never shuts up just saying the funniest shit. His perspective on life was so unbelievable. So
it'll be funny because we'll just run around and talk shit about rappers all day. But we wasn't into music.
Right.
We'll just talk shit all day. Ah, this shit is whack. This is just talking shit all day. And that's how I met Tax Stone.
And then do you remember when he started to get his platform, when people started really fucking with him?
I was already interning.
Right.
And then we were still hanging out every day. And then he just, like, yo, I'm going to start. I think he started doing some shit with Charlamagne first. Charlamagne put him on MTV.
He was on that show a little bit.
He did a little of that show. And then he just started doing the podcast little by little. And that shit just fast.
Do you remember when Ja Rule was like trying to explain how actually he won the beef with 50? And Tax was like,
no.
Well, nah.
I mean, Tax don't get you how it is, man. Tax don't care.
He's the best dude ever. And it sucks that, like, when you look at him, he's the realest dude ever. And that's why we probably won't see him for a very, very long time.
He kept it 1K with everybody. He definitely did.
Crazy.
But I miss him, man. I miss him because at least he'll fucking talk shit that nobody else will say. At least he'll say it. At least he'll fucking say it. Even if you ain't want to hear it, at least he fucking said it.
There were so many times during, like, the great 2017 everyday struggle time period, which I guess is over now, where it was just like, God, I wish I knew what Tax had to say about this shit.
Absolutely, man.
Wouldn't it have been beautiful to be able to, because you would watch Everyday Struggle, see the clips all week, and then
seen what Tax did to Joe Button. Put him on, you seen what he did to Joe Button.
But that, once I started talking to you and I realized you managed Ransom and that you were running around with Tax, then all of a sudden it made sense to me why Tax was so hostile towards Joe Budden in that famous interview where Joe walked out.
Shout out Joe Budden.
He's a loyal dude, and he wasn't going to let Joe get off easy.
I mean, Tax is my brother, man.
Yeah. But you never personally had any issues with Joe Budden? It was just kind of who you were running around with?
Me and Joe always been cool, man. Like, I had, like, you know, of course when Rand went to jail, I was mad as shit. But, you know, now that shit walled under the bridge. Like, you know, I known Joe for 20 years. Like, mm-hmm. you know, we from the same place. Like, you know, I wish him the best.
So were you actually with Tax the day that the situation unfolded that he got arrested for? You were with him earlier in the day?
He was actually, PNB Rock was performing that day. You know, he was at the venue. Like, you know, he was at the venue. Like, we all was at the venue. We all hang out together, you know?
Uh-huh.
But I left with PNB earlier, you know?
Right.
Unfortunately.
Because you were saying that if you were around, then you were with a shitload of people. It might not have happened like that.
Left, and, you know, he'd have left with us, and that shit wouldn't have happened, you know? At the end of the day, somebody lost their life, and, you know, you never want a loss of life, and somebody's going to jail, and somebody's career, you know, like, there's a lot of families. A lot of families get, you know, it just fucks families up, you know? A lot of people ain't eating now, you know?
Right.
Somebody lost a son, like, you know, it's just not right, man.
Yeah. And when you, well, does it change how you think about shit? Because it's like, you're obviously, like, in a lot of perspectives where shit could go down.
I mean, we men and we from the hood, so we be ignorant. Like, you don't think about that shit until it happens, like, you know? Absolutely, like, of course you think about the shit, but at the heat of the moment, you ain't thinking about that shit. Like, you ain't thinking about, damn, my mom's gonna be crying, I go to jail, with this, that, my family shit fucked up, and you're not thinking about that shit.
But Tax was not meant for this world in a lot of ways because he was too real. Like, he was the kind of guy who was not gonna take an L. He was not gonna fucking move around in a way where he wasn't safe. And, I mean, you can't live in New York and be running around like that for very long without catching up to you.
Listen, man, unfortunate situation, man. You know, hopefully people out there see what happens and, you know, make better decisions, you know, use Tax and be like, damn, you know, Tax really has something going on for himself and the shit got fucked up for making a bad decision. You know, hopefully people make better decisions.
Right. Is it, you know, you signed artists that definitely, you know, did a lot of drugs or were involved in the street shit still. Is that something where you feel the need to intervene and try to make a change in them?
If you're doing something other than weed, I'm going to tell you something.
Right.
Like, you ain't going to do nothing other than weed around my watch. Like, you know, weed is cool. You know, you want to chill out, smoke some weed, relax, you know?
Right.
Even if you abusing the liquor, like, don't even abuse the liquor. Like, you know, you have to maintain.
It's tough to tell a kid that, though.
You have to tell them, though.
Right.
They have to know, like, you know, right from wrong. If you drinking and you acting like an asshole, you don't let somebody keep acting like an asshole, you have to tell them, like, look, man, you can't drink because you act like an asshole. You have to stop.
But would that ever stop you from wanting to work with an artist that they were too fucked up?
Because if you give people the right, if you talk to people the right way, like, they're not going, I ain't going to have no drug addict around me. Ain't no artist of mine's going to be no fucking drug addict. I ain't going to let that shit happen. Like, they ain't going to be in a position or in a space mentally where they have to be drug addicts.
Right. Man, but when I think about a lot of the artists that, like, I've been around that, like, I could have potentially ended up, you know, signing or being involved in their career more. And I try to imagine what it would have been like if I was like, nah, you got to stay off the Zans. You got to stop drinking lean. It's,
man,
like,
that shit wasn't damn. Cool, man. It got fucked up. That shit is cool now. I remember when you did drugs, people looked at you like a fucking loser.
Right.
And they didn't even want to be around you.
But it feels like even a lot of these younger rappers, they're learning that lesson pretty fast now, where I feel like as a rapper, like, I don't think you could put out a single or a song that was really hot talking about Zans all crazy now. It's like people, it's too up close and personal when people think about the what it really does.
If your music is based on Zans, then you got to hang it up, man. It's got to be based on emotion, pain, joy, things that bring stuff to your life, things that are gonna make you feel better, feel worse, trigger emotions. If you're not doing that, if you're just talking about doing drugs, get the fuck out of here. I'm definitely ain't gonna give you no deal.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, I think it's hard for the audience even to be fully into an artist who's just talking all reckless about, like, oh, I'm so cool because I'm off the perks and the Zans and shit like that.
That shit ain't cool.
It feels like it might have felt cool to the fans for a while, but it's like there's a short time period where that shit feels acceptable.
That shit ain't cool, man. It just ain't.
Yeah. Facts.
If you're abusing them drugs, stop, man. Like, you know, smoke some weed. Do your music. Smoke some weed. That's it.
Yeah, for real. Who else have you worked with since then? I feel like we covered a lot of the big ones, but
I mean, basically Leaky.
Oh, yeah.
Shoreline Mafia.
So what's your involvement with Shoreline?
I signed them.
You did sign them?
Yeah.
Was that, how'd that process go down? And what makes you believe in them, which I completely agree with?
I just think that we need something like that. We need something cool from the West Coast that's fun and, you know,
uh-huh.
something that, you know, make you want to party and, you
it's
know, not
gangster, but fun.
gangster, but it's fun, you know, a bunch of kids having fun.
And it's multi-ethnic, which seems like it does a lot for the fans.
Reminds me of something like the Alcoholics.
Yeah.
You know, just something fun.
It's not like, oh, like we're a bunch of friends from the West Coast and we're gangster and we're going to kill you. It's like, no, we're like gangster, but we're just having a good time, you know.
They were chicks.
Somebody just knock? Might be Boonk. I'm going to laugh my ass off if Boonk walks in right now.
They're chilling with chicks, you know, they having fun.
Right.
What are they doing? What they do? They doing what kids doing nowadays, so you know.
They're all about good time. That's what I like about them.
Fuck with them.
Is it Boonk?
We got Old Trap Star, you know.
Old Trap Star. How'd you know that that was the one? What's up, Boonk?
I just heard the record and thought that shit was going to do something.
Right. What's up, G?
You know, I just fucked with it.
Hi, how you doing? Yeah, Shoreline.
I like his energy.
Who, Boonk?
Boonk, hey, Boonk in the building. What's good with you, man? Going on?
He got the fucking culotta or some shit over there.
Yeah, terrorizing. You got terrorizing niggas out here, man.
But so let me ask you, like, at this point in your life, like, how do you choose how to divide your time? Because you got a lot of different artists you could potentially go spend time with, a lot of, you know, different situations, things you could spend your time doing. What do you prioritize?
I just roll with the punches, man. I just pick up my phone and I make calls and whatever I'm needed, I just go.
Right.
So you set schedule, I just go.
You like being on the road like that and everything?
Yeah, absolutely. I just like discovering new talent, putting new shit out.
Yeah. You have like a crazy, like humble, organic, like way that you look at it. Like it's so easy to see why you're so good at it because it doesn't feel like you are looking at it from a business perspective. Because I feel like, isn't that what fucks up a lot of stuff? Like when people get into the industry, they're really good at their job, and then they start thinking about it, like how to make money instead of how to, you know, progress the culture or push good art.
It's all about the art.
Yeah.
If I don't push the art the right way, then what I'm doing ain't doing that.
Yeah. Facts.
That's what I'm trying to break leaky. Different art, different shit.
But now your cosign is so strong that, like, I feel like you'll be able to get Leaky a big ass deal before he even has to break on an underground level.
I mean, I just want to get him a big fan base.
Right.
You know?
But so, from your perspective of artists like that, is like, is it ever too early to sign, or you want to get him the fan base before you sign him?
I mean, it all depends. Like I told you, it's all different. Depends what the artist needs.
Right.
If you need the whole structure to make it there, you're going to need a deal. If you don't need the structure, it all depends on your team,
yeah.
How strong your team is.
Do you feel like you're going to stay motivated to keep pushing like this part of your life, or do you feel like this is something you're doing for a while and at a certain point you're going to chill out?
I mean, I don't know. Right now, I enjoy it. Right now, I want to keep winning, so I want to keep knocking it out. And it feels good to sign somebody and it change their life,
yep.
And change their mama life. And you know nigga ain't gonna go to jail no more because you know he act. Like, that shit feel good. That's what feel good about doing this shit.
That's amazing.
You know, because I've been in situations where I might not come home and what the fuck I'm gonna do and I can't pay my rent. You gotta go out there and do crazy shit to survive and even feed yourself. So to change somebody's life, man, that's what I do it for.
Right. That's serious. Well, so you officially Sniper Gang? How did that happen?
Man.
Was there a ceremony?
Yo, Kodak, my family, man. Like, you know?
Shout out Kodak,
my nigga. Kodak. Kodak, free Kodak, man. I've been fucking with Kodak since he was 16, man.
Yeah.
And you know, Kodak's just Kodak, man.
Yeah. You know, one of
so
a kind.
I just fuck with Kodak. Anything Kodak need, I'm there for him.
Yeah.
Sniper Gang.
Crazy. What else do you think we should cover? Is you feel like we got to the root of... who you are as a person, or should we keep going deeper? What else is there?
We good, like, it's been long as shit.
Yeah, we did about almost 10 minutes. It's pretty solid. All right. Well, I guess I'll be at the studio later with the Shoreline session and shit, see what they're cooking up.
That's a fact. Let's get it.
They're a problem, though, because they always got 30 people in the fucking...
We're going to go in there, it's going to be motherfuckers getting tatted, motherfuckers going crazy in there, but you know it's going to be a good atmosphere.
Yeah, you feel like, you're saying that brings back the old school vibe.
Fact.
Who used to be in the studio with that would be having as fucking lit as they do?
Lit like that?
Yeah.
Damn, man. So many sessions, man. Max B.
Yo, really?
That nigga's the studio king.
Man, the kids out there have no idea how great he could have been.
He was in the studio going nuts.
You know where he's at in terms of his court shit, or is it just not happening?
I mean, I'll be seeing French post shit, man. Hopefully he come home, man.
Yeah.
Nobody want to be in jail, but you need somebody like Max B home.
Every once in a blue moon, it feels like you see something in the news that sounds like a little bit of hope that it's not going to be like a 70-year bid, but...
I mean, that Bergen County's a motherfucker up there, that part of Jersey, which, you know, hopefully, you know.
Yeah.
That appeal, they let them out.
Free Max B, that's a fact. All right, Orlando, it was an amazing conversation. Really appreciate it.
Deuce, deuce.
Somebody I respect like crazy in the game. I'm glad we finally got this conversation out.
Yeah. Definitely.
Thank you, bro.
We're going to keep pushing the coach and getting these young niggas where they're supposed to be, man.
Easy. Hey, you need anybody that needs an interview, you just let me know.
Fact. We're going to get it.
Facts. All right, No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world. Check us out on YouTube, SoundCloud, iTunes. Bow. I'm rolling like an alcoholic guy. I'm rolling like an alcoholic guy.